part-time fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
More powerful than a locomotive.
I'm not doing part. Fanboy.com.
Well, shall we begin with this podcast?
Shall
we get started discussing the movie that Zack Snyder really wanted to direct?
Zack Snyder wishes he could have directed this.
He wanted it so badly.
Wishes.
This is the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast. My name is Christian Horn, and I am on the line with my three compatriots, my three friends, comrades. I've got Jay Holtham on the line.
Hello.
Reina Velarde.
And hello.
The last but not least, Paul Edwards on the line. And we are here to chat about Brightburn. The new Gunn family produced, created movie. There's a lot of guns involved in this.
A lot of guns. Than I thought there were. I only thought there were the two.
Yeah. There's a lot of guns.
They missed out by not calling their production company the Gun Show. That's all.
They totally missed
out. That's
funny. So, for those who are listening, Brightburn is a film that basically takes the Superman mythos. I mean, come on. Takes the Superman mythos and turns it upside down, inside out, and all the way around. Short and sweet, Brightburn is the evil, sociopathic Superman. Correct?
Pretty much.
Yeah, that's a great way to sum it up, is Superman, but bad.
Yeah.
Superman, but sociopath is really the key one. The kid's a sociopath.
The S stands for sociopath.
Well, I mean, there's always been the whole thing of like Superman is an alien, you know?
Well,
and
sure.
This is the first movie that sort of takes that seriously, of the sense of like, you know, he looks like us, but he's not one of us.
Yes.
Yes.
And then also, I mean, to the sort of Zack Snyder point, you know, Zack Snyder, like Man of Steel, so leans into kind of Superman as autistic and Superman as like emotionally stunted. Uh-huh. And this really does take that to the like nth degree.
Cranks it up to 11. It does.
I mean, specifically, it's kind of, I do feel like this is a specific take on the Man of Steel Superman.
You think? You know, I mean, that's the thing, is that I'm watching this movie and I'm very much like copyright lawyers. Like, I'm so like stunned as to how like Superman it is, you know what I'm saying? Like, there's absolutely no shying away from it. And anyone who's a friend of mine or listens to this podcast knows that I'm a huge Superman fan. And when this movie was announced, I was like, oh, okay. Like, I'm not against like showing different versions of what could happen. Like, like, I think Mark Waid did a series called Irredeemable, years ago, which was excellent, which was sort of like an evil sort of Superman. There's been like Hyperion. There's been like Bizarro. Yep. There have been like lots of different.
Miracle Man.
Yeah, Miracle Man. Lots of different versions of Superman. And it's funny because I think a lot of my friends, you know, or people that know me, knew this movie was coming out and were probably like, oh, that's going to piss Christian off. And I it didn't actually. I was like, oh, cool. I'm open to this. Like, I'm open to checking this out, especially because what's his face? The main gun, James Gunn, was behind it, you know. So I've been a fan of his before Guardians of the Galaxy. So but I was you know, I gotta say, I was pretty shocked as to how much they lifted, like directly from like like directly from screenplays where I was like, oh yep. my God, this might as well be like, they might, I mean, did the screenwriter, did Tom Mankiewicz get credit on this at all? Like, cause
parody laws, parody laws. It's okay.
Yeah,
okay.
I guess so.
Parody.
I guess so. I was pretty stunned. How about, gents and lady, what were some of your thoughts going into it?
I'm not quite as versed in the sort of Superman. Well, I'm pretty versed in the Superman mythos in general, sort of the Superman world. I don't think that my knowledge of like Superman on film and screen can probably come anywhere close to what Christian brings to the table.
People's can.
Exactly.
Well, look, I'm not Mark Waid, but I know stuff. I know some stuff, but anyway, go on.
I didn't feel like there were any obvious visual references to the other movies. I feel like that's one of the things that they sort of avoided.
Okay, go on.
I didn't see anything that was like clear, like, oh yeah, no, that's a shot from, like, there were a few sort of Man of Steel-y shots of the like sun through the corn.
Yeah.
In that like car commercial way that Zack Snyder movies look.
Snyder has basically lifted Terrence Malick's style and like turned it into, you know, a marketable film style. I felt like they really played that a lot more in the trailer than they did in the movie. Like the trailer really felt like specifically a commentary on the Man of Steel trailers, which were great. I mean, I fucking love the Man of Steel trailers. They were better than the movie.
Sure.
But when it came down to the movie itself, for me, I felt it had like just enough Superman references that it kept it like fresh and not they didn't overplay it. I mean, they could have really gone like a lot further than they did, and I was glad that they didn't. Instead, they were just like, it was enough to set up the premise, and honestly, at the end of the day, it really made me appreciate what a hell of a job Ma and Pa Kent raising that son Clark, because they did a great job.
Well,
right?
Yeah. Okay, so here's the thing: is that like I appreciate what Paul is saying, that it didn't go like too deep into, and I don't mean to cut Raina off. I'm sorry, Raina, if you had something to say, go ahead.
No,
I just like, for me, it's really funny to say like this didn't go too deep into the Superman mythos, because it really does, guys. I mean, I'm watching this and I'm like, there is so much use of like shortcuts, like cinematic shortcuts that are so like Superman, like derived and like embedded in Superman, and that are so embedded in our brains as far as like American culture and like knowing what Superman is, that they just jump ahead in the story so many times that I'm like, it's basically like, yeah. You know what's happening here, right? Like, we're just going to move on. Like they don't, you know, they don't delve into the story at certain points, or like Brightburn's origins, you know, or oranges, as our president would say, origins, you know, so they skip around so much, and there's so much like cinematic and I guess screenplay like shorthand used in this, that it is so like delved in Superman that I was just like, oh wow. Like, you guys just like are taking it for granted that like you guys know everything. Everyone knows how it all works, and we're just gonna kind of go. And it sort of adds to the sort of brevity of how like short the movie is, and sort of like to the pacing of like how quickly everything moves along. And it's a really good argument. I mean, this movie in a way is also a really good argument for the people who are like, they're making another Superman movie. They're making another Batman movie. Like, we all know it. Like, you don't have to tell us. So that's very smart in this, but it's not a Superman movie. You know what I mean?
In a way. What I was thinking is it's more on the side of a horror movie than a superhero movie. And sure. I think that in that frame, horror movies don't explain shit, right? It's just like, all right. something evil's happening, they're fucking shit up and killing people or whatever, and then maybe we get the origin story in the sequel.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's like, they burned him in a basement because he was diddling the kids, you know, now he can enter the dreams. Just go with it.
You don't know why that works. You know, it reminded me, like, the horror movie part is the part, because it is such an effective horror movie.
Yeah.
From my money. Like, it's so well made. And, you know, earlier this summer, I don't normally like talking bad about things that I see, that, like, I generally try not to yuck anyone's yum or to be that person who's like, I'm going to trash things. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to trash something.
Go for it.
Earlier this summer, I saw The Prodigy, which is basically the same movie, but does not work nearly as well. Okay. And it's not nearly as smart and interesting and twisty, even though, as you're right, Christian, it relies on, Brightburn relies on our knowledge of, like, the Superman mythos and what he does and how it works to provide all of that sort of background of, oh yes, he can fly and he can shoot lasers out of his eyes, just go with it.
Yeah.
You know, in a way that, like, a movie like Prodigy just didn't do. Like, the kid wasn't scary, the thing wasn't scary. This was terrifying.
Yeah, you're right. Here's how bad it was, Jay. We just realized that we saw Prodigy and we'd completely forgotten.
I've never seen that.
Oh, I guess we did see. Well, I guess it wasn't memorable.
That's funny.
But Brightburn really does stick out for me because, I mean, first of all, I mean, that's some gory shit. They went hard on the gore.
Like, literally on my notes, I just, like, gore, exclamation. Like,
really? I didn't think it was that gory. I thought the moments that were
the
gory.
Gore was done well.
Yeah, very much. You know, it's funny because it's like, I think the typical person would think, like, oh, I did not like this movie. And the thing is I liked it. Like, but it's very middle of the road for me. Like, I did not find it scary. I did not find it. I mean, I was like, okay. I mean, this is very much like the first It, like, you know, not the 80s version, but the one that we talked about like a couple years ago. And there's a sequel coming out this summer where there's like, yes, we're sort of going through the paces, and yes, it's like horrifying and there's gore and people are being attacked, but there's just something missing for me, like a deeper sort of like primal fear that just did not tap into what was going on with me as a comic fan and as a horror fan. I was like, I appreciate what you're doing, like, I like this, but it did not blow me out of the back of the theater, you know, as much as I wanted it to, you know. And And basically, while I was watching it, I was like, this is The Omen. I was like, it's The Omen. And the thing about The Omen, too, is that I think more in the second movie than in the first one, the thing that fails for me in this movie, and Paul, you mentioned it a little earlier, is like Ma and Pa Kent in this movie. Like, first of all, can we just say that Elizabeth Banks is like a national treasure? Like she's amazing.
She's like, so good in
this. She's so good. And the thing that pisses me off the most about this movie, which, you know, is not very much because this movie did not anger me or upset me in any way, is the fact that David Denman and Elizabeth Banks were used for this and not an actual Superman movie. Like, they are amazing as the Ma and Pa Kent, like, stand-ins. They're fantastic. First of all, the acting in all this is great. The kid is great. Everyone's great. Like, the realization of the dad very much, like, as like things are going bad, is like really great. Like, I enjoyed all that. But the thing that kind of bugs me about the movie, and maybe that's because this is very much meant to sort of just be like, hey, this is a horror movie and it's not supposed to go any deeper than that. But the thing is like, the parents do a really good job in this movie of like raising him. But the thing is like, they come up against the ship, right? Which is basically like in the original Donner movie, sending, you know, Clark signals, you know, and, you know, telling him about the Fortress of Solitude and come to the ship and get the crystal. Like, but in this movie, like, the kid is being told to, like, take over the world or just take whatever you want. The thing that bugs me about this movie, and maybe you could have added an extra 15, 20 minutes to it, is I didn't sense any inner conflict with the kid going on. Like, I did not get the, like, Yeah, I didn't get it. Okay. Like I thought he started getting the messages and he just kind of like turned right away. Almost right away.
I think that's on purpose. I think it is that just like a switch. He's being taken over and then has the disconnect, and so it's like a hard.
I mean,
or even I think sociopaths.
Yeah. Look,
I'm no psychologist, but I think that's too right where they're doing something creepy, and then oh look, I'm a normal human person.
Right.
And
right.
Oh no, I'm creepy again. No, look, I'm a human. Yeah. So I think it kind of does go the way it should go in that sense.
Because the thing that I had just what informed me viewing this movie is I had just read a few articles from parents who have lost kids to becoming right-wing internet thinkers, you know, the incel movement, you know, like the, all of these, you know, and how like their sweet children are suddenly these horrible Nazis, you know?
Yeah.
And of course you've got the puberty metaphor going on there too. I mean, how like, you know, things just switch. I felt like, for me, it hit all the right, his performance hit all the right notes. And I also dig that his name, Brandon Breyer, is like literally just right off of, like one letter off of Clark, you know.
I know. I was like, that was so perfect. I'm in the same boat with Paul and Raina on that, where I actually also felt like, in the kid, there was still like the mechanics of the ship sort of sending in messages, et cetera, et cetera. It still felt like it was a slow sort of turn where he would like do something weird and creepy and then be like, wait, what did I do? And I felt that sort of feeling from that kid of like, I don't fully understand what's happening until about midway through when he like clearly just gives over to it and becomes the full on monster that he becomes. Like that to me was an interesting sort of journey. And I did, like, I didn't get the incel metaphor, but definitely the metaphor of like having a sociopathic kid, you know, and having this kid that has something or a drug addicted kid, a kid that has something deeply wrong with him. And you as a parent sort of know, and you feel sort of responsible, but you're also like, it's your kid and you love them and you're willing to like do the fight. Like the biggest thing for me between this and something like The Prodigy is The Prodigy had no second layer. It was just, my kid is weirdly a reincarnation of a serial killer, and that's pretty much it. Like this at least had that sort of second layer of watching, and part of it is Elizabeth Banks' performance, watching her just wrestle with the reality of her child.
Yeah, and you know, and that's the thing is, I had no problem with that. I had no problem. I did have a problem like when the dad like takes him into the woods and is going to shoot him. I had a problem with that because very much like the ending of The Mist. You know, the Frank Darabont film, as a parent, I'm very much like, you're not going to do that until you've seen something or it's like the last moment. Like I felt like the dad had to see something with his own eyes to have to be that terrified of the kid, you know, to be like, okay, I'm going to do this, you know, but
His brother's jaw ripped off of his face.
That was so cool. But he doesn't. The thing is like he's being told that, and he's making assumptions, and he is leaping through hoops, which is why it makes Elizabeth Banks's character so believable because they haven't seen anything. It's basically, and it makes Elizabeth Banks's denial much more believable. Because she is like, what are you talking about? Like, this is our son. He's never exhibited like anything like this in front of us. And he's getting the idea and he's coming out of the denial. But I don't feel that he's seen anything in front of him to like that would absolutely terrify him to the point of where he's like, I got to take this kid out. You know what I mean? That's just me.
I don't know, man, because he's I don't think he ever really accepted him. I mean, he did the best he could. But at the end of the day, he just knew that.
Well, and remember, you know, though, he was the one that felt his strength in the small little altercations that happened.
Yeah.
That's as well. True. Like that, he never put his hands on his mom, but he did to his dad. So he did. He may have not seen all the horrific things that he's done, but he certainly felt that there was something off.
Yeah. And again, the thing in the woods is a minor quibble of mine. Again, it's like the same thing with The Mist where I'm like, that's a long way to go to take your kid into the back of the woods.
Problem with the woods is like he knows he's the one that tells us, hey, the kid's never bled. There's something off. So like, what makes you feel like shooting him is gonna do it?
Yeah, exactly. Well, but that's the thing is, I didn't have any problems with the parents. The reason that this movie fails a bit for me is very much the reason why Man of Steel sort of failed. And it's very much like, it's so focused like on the parents and the raising and the sort of like, and the abilities and what you can do and how horrible it can be, that it loses the central character of the kid in the mix for me. And it's very much like Man of Steel, where it's like you're so focused on the origin and the messages that the dad are telling him and all this stuff, and like that you lose the central character of who is Clark Kent, who is Superman. And the thing is like with this kid, I'm like, who is this kid? You know, because for me, it would have been much more traumatic to see him go through these events if they hadn't been so focused on like, look at all the crazy things that are happening and that he can do, if there was a sort of three-dimensional kid in there, which I never bought. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And
I hear what you're saying, but I think that's where the horror movie of it comes in, where he's not the central character. She is.
Yeah, yeah. And you're probably right, because at some point towards the end of the movie, I was like, oh, Elizabeth Banks is the final girl. Like, she's the one that's going to, you know, survive, like, the whole thing and, you know, come out ahead or whatever. Yeah, obviously not. Yeah, yeah. Spoilers, obviously not. But, you know, that's what I started
thinking. It doesn't end well for humanity.
No. It never does.
No, it does not.
But I think they did a good job in the trailers of making you think that we were going to see a three-dimensional sweet kid throughout the movie, right? Because, like, in the trailers, they're doing that safety thing, but it looks like they're picking on him and they're pushing him and they push him down.
Yeah.
But then we find out, oh, this is some trust exercise that you're, which I did never did that. And
oh my God.
Yeah. Realize, oh, she's not trying to like, she doesn't want to pick him up because, you know, she's bullying him, but because he was being a creeper earlier and like, you know,
He was being Brandon Routh in Superman Returns. Yeah. 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 I mean, it really, you know, I mean, the thing of it is like, I like, again, going back to like the shortcuts of Superman and the shortcuts of horror movies, I just felt like for me, it's like if I had been, and I think The Omen 2 does it a little bit more than the original Omen does, whereas you start sympathizing with that kid and the kid doesn't know what's going on. And it's like, oh yeah, you're the son of Satan. You know what I mean? And it's like, oh, okay, great. And I feel like that was a little bit of this path, but there was a bit going on where I was very much sort of like, I don't empathize with this kid enough. This isn't as tragic to me as it could be. But again, the reason that I think so much of this movie works is because of Elizabeth Banks. I mean, she's fantastic. And I'm watching this movie and I listened to an interview with her a while ago, I think, on NPR. And she was talking about, you know, producing parts for women, that she was making her own movies and stuff like that. And she's in directing now. And I'm like, and she's always sort of been relegated to like these comedies or like smaller parts in movies. And after seeing this, and I think she did a movie about one of the Beach Boys, like Brian Wilson. I can't remember what the name of the movie is. It was actually pretty good. But I'm like, this woman is like, she needs a bigger vehicle. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like she needs something like, I don't know what it is, but she's been around forever and tons of people really like her in Hollywood. But I feel like that there is an untapped potential, or maybe a potential that I have not been aware of, that needs to be mined here. Am I wrong about that?
No, she's terrific. And you know, the other thing too to remember is that this is a low budget horror movie too.
Yep.
I mean, it's not. Yeah, I think it's got like a $6 million budget.
Oh,
you
wow,
know,
that's
it's
it.
Like, yeah, it's not a big scaled movie.
Yeah.
But it's got big scale ideas, which I dig.
Yeah. I mean, oh, go ahead, Jay.
I mean, I was just going to say, for me, the tragedy, just to come back to it, the tragedy so lives on her, you know, that like in that whole sequence where he's stalking her sister, the guidance counselor, like, and obviously the end of that sequence, which is fucking terrifying. And what a great, like, let's just again say that they should probably cast more comedians in horror movies more often. Like, I know Matt Jones is a comic actor from Mom, and his reaction to seeing the kid floating in the street of just, nope.
Yeah.
I was like, yep, that's how I was like, nope, that's not happening. We're not going to deal with that. But I'm saying, you know, that like all of that, I just was like, the person that really I was worried about was not him, but her, was Elizabeth Banks, the mom who was so invested in her son's innocence and purity and was so wrong.
Yeah. But again, for me, it's like the failing is not theirs. For me, it's like there's a ship in the freaking barn that is transmitting a signal. And that was part of the thing that bugged me, too, is like I was hoping that the plot would, and it would have been a little predictable, but it's like, let's destroy the ship that's sending the signals. You know what I'm saying? And the other thing for me, too, is like, is this the same as Superman in that are the ship signals activating his powers? Are they, you know, are they making him super? Like, if you destroy that ship, do his powers disappear? Like, you know,
I don't know, Christian. You'll have to see Brightburn 2.
Which, let me say right now, I am so on board for the entire Brightburn universe.
Yes, that
they damn well better give me. I am ready for 7 movies. tag on this movie was maybe the most exciting thing I've seen in a long time, and I'm just, please give me more.
So just somebody more. Needs to, so that's, and that's the other thing where we get into copyright or like trademark or whatever kind of infringement. I'm like, so we've basically set up this evil Superman movie, right? Everybody knows it's evil Superman.
Yes.
So
yes,
they are going to go forward further in a franchise, which I would assume like the next movies would have to deviate even further from the source material. But I'm like, wow, how is Warner Brothers? I mean, maybe this is a Warner Brothers or a branch of Warner Brothers production. I don't know. Or maybe it's just because James Gunn is shooting
Sony.
Suicide Squad. Oh, is it Sony?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So there's a part of me that's like very much like if I was at Warner Brothers, I'd be like, guys, seriously, you're going to make a whole like what supervillain universe and you're going to use
right.
like you're going to use Superman as like the linchpin of this and have him wear a Spider-Man mask. Like,
yes.
Wouldn't it be funny if Sony ended up becoming sort of the Charleston Comics
I mean, funny because like I'm watching this movie and stuff is happening and I'm like, and I'm just like, literally, like, it's great because, like, there's so much of Elizabeth Banks' dialogue that is, like, directly lifted from other Superman movies where it's like, we found you, we wanted a child so bad, and mm-hmm. you came from the sky, mm-hmm. and we prayed for. I mean, I'm like, that's from the first Superman movie. I'm like, and you know, and there's like chunks and chunks of that dialogue, just like chunks of it. And I'm like, how? How are you getting away with this? And then, but the moment that it's great that turns for me. You know, because I mean, like, let's face it, like the Superman story is very much like the sort of perfect adoption tale, like where it's like you adopt a child. The child is perfect, grows up to be perfect. When you tell them they're adopted, they totally accept it and they're like cool with it. And they're like, yeah, you're my parents. I don't have any problems with it. And then he grows up and he becomes like a perfect human being and he goes out and he changes society for the better. Like in this, the moment that I appreciated the most out of the whole movie was where she finally kind of like drops the bomb, like you're adopted on him and we found you in the ship. And he's like, screw that noise. He's like, you lied to me. Like he just like turns. And it was like, for me, it was like just, it was a great moment because I'm like, okay, like, yeah, like this could totally go wrong. And for mm-hmm. me, that's the moment where like very solidly deviates from the Superman myth where it's like, yeah, okay. Like I understand like this could have gone in a whole other direction. And it's such a great and solid turn that it made me sit up in my chair and go like, oh, well, that's interesting. You know, you never saw Clark get pissed off at his parents for lying. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, yeah. I'm having trouble. It's funny because when I came out of it, I was having lots of problems, like sort of just processing it as like a Superman fan, not being angry or anything, but just being like, how are we doing this? Like, you know what I mean? Because
you, a good movie should comment on the stuff that came before it. You know what
sure.
I mean? Like, I mean, yeah, it's, I don't think you can. I mean, essentially this is like Lex Luthor's nightmare. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
And it's kind of funny. If you set up for a sequel, literally you could have a Lex Luthor figure who's the hero of this thing because he's just trying to stop this crazy thing from destroying the earth.
Yeah, yeah.
Give me all the Earth 3 you can give me. Just keep it coming. Legion of Supervillains, this is the best. Oh my God. Crime Syndicate of America, yes, please.
Well, see, Jay is playing into a little bit of my fear, though, because it's like whenever a movie like this comes out, like Man of Steel or this, it so plays into that, like those, you know, I don't know what you call them. Like, I want to call them like meathead comic fans who are like, or just like, you know how like so much of our superhero, and I talk about this every once in a while with probably with you guys and other friends and stuff, where it's like the sort of like jockifying of our superhero. Like when we were kids, it was about the outcasts and stuff like that. And now it's about like power and strength and like, and I feel that this movie in a way sort of, and Man of Steel plays into that sort of thing. Well, don't you see that? That's exactly how it would go. Like that's, and sure. Okay. Like I'm not going to lie. I live in the real world. Maybe if there was, okay, definitely if there was a Superman type of, this might be how it goes. But, like, you know, it sort of makes me, like, worried or fearful. Those are probably too strongly used adjectives that I'm using. But it kind of makes me worried that, like, you know, there's definitely these people who are like, well, Superman's dumb. He's, you know, and I'm like, no, it's just, I understand that this is a different take, but there's, you know, you lose sort of that optimistic hope, you know what I'm saying? And and this isn't taking anything away from that, but the more that people sort of like buy into this, like, yes, this is what would happen, like that just drives me crazy. You know what I'm saying? Am I clear or am I just babbling at this point because of my love for Superman?
No, I think it's almost a critique, right? Like, because he starts, the kid starts as being the smart kid, right? That's why he gets interest by that other girl in his class of like, oh, he's just able to babble off about the wasp and the bees.
Yeah.
And it's great the other scene. Kids that are like, oh, you're just know everything. You know, what are you? I don't remember even what stupid remark he says to him. But then he ends up going to brute strength. But like the critique is that brute strength destroys the people you love and destroys the earth.
Yeah. And that's the thing is like, you're absolutely right. I see the movie as, and much of that as a critique, but it's so much of that sort of like the subtleties of movies like this, they tend to get lost on a certain amount crowd of people. You know what I'm saying? That
crowd of people's never going to get it, man.
Yeah.
They're the ones who have sort of brought they're the ones. This movie is a critique of all of those people who are the toxic fans, the toxic masculine fans.
Yeah.
Who are like, you know, if I were given Superman powers, I could do a better job. I could be, you know, it's that arm, that whole thing. And this movie is saying, no, you probably wouldn't.
Yeah, exactly.
And for me, it also really reinforces the optimism and beauty of Superman.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. You know, I have this long running argument with a guy who works at the bar by me. Who is a Batman fan. And this is an argument that I have with Batman fans all the time, where I'm like, Batman lives every single day because Superman lets him. And they hate hearing him. They're like, he's got a plan, he's got this, he's got that. I'm like, you don't understand the godlike power that Superman has, and the one weakness is that he does not use it.
Yeah,
I feel like this movie to me is just a reminder of like, right, these are the things that Superman could do.
Yeah.
If he were not a force for good, if he were not choosing actively every day to not do them, like when he sweeps that freaking sheriff off the porch,
and
he just like swoops in out of nowhere, and you're like, yeah, no, Batman has no defense against that.
Yeah, exactly.
Who are you kidding me?
Yeah, well, and that was sort of the thing. Is very much like, you know, when they were gonna do like Batman v Superman the movie. Yeah. Where I was like, did you see Man of Steel? Did you see like the whole city, like force of nature? He's a man, Batman. He can't.
I totally just caught something that I don't know if anybody else caught, right? Bird, it's a plane. He kills birds and he destroyed a plane.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, yeah, and there is all this sort of like really.
I'm sorry.
No, it's great. There's all this really fun sort of like, taking a piss at, you know, the Superman mythos, you know what I mean, in this movie that sort of makes it enjoyable as well. I mean, you know, that's the sort of thing is, again, as a fan of Superman and still having expressed like all my silly concerns about, you know, Superman and all that stuff, I still did enjoy, like, it is still kind of like enjoyable to indulge in what Jay's talking about, where it's like, God damn, I don't know about that guy. like I don't know. Like you know, even as kids, sometimes we would like wish that there would be superheroes. And then you watch something like this and you're like, I don't know about that. I mean, it's so interesting to me how like you could take something like this and just mold it in a certain way enough that you could make a small budget superhero, small budget horror movie, excuse me, superhero movie, and like just be like, yeah, just ignore the other thing that's been around for 80 years. this is what we're doing. And I guess that's where my brain just sort of gets stuck. It's like, how are you getting away with this? You know, and because there are moments in this movie, and I addressed it before again, like with the parents, there are moments in this movie that would be beautiful in a Superman movie. Oh, you know what I'm saying? That this guy who directed it, David Yurovsky.
Yeah.
I don't know. I probably mangled his last name. Like, I'm watching this movie and I'm like, damn, I wish this guy had directed a Superman movie. You know what I mean? Because there's so much, like, you know, the shots of the farm and, you know, the dad sort of like, you know, really being invested in the kid, and the mom just like so proud of him. And then, you know, so like when it goes wrong for somebody like me, it's very much like the needle on the record where it's like, and I'm like, oh yeah, wow. In a way, the movie did kind of suck me in, you know, to where I was like, oh, this is like really nice. And then once you sort of get to the parts where the kid is like chewing on the fork and you're like, oh, geez.
Oh, that's so creepy.
Yeah, you're just so like, but you guys got to explain the button of the, because I guess I don't get out to see horror movies enough. The button at the end with, what's his face from Guardians of the Galaxy?
Yep, like Michael Rooker.
Yeah, Michael Rooker. What are those other horror movie characters that he's talking about, or?
Dude, it's Aquaman and Wonder Woman.
Oh, okay, okay, okay. I was trying to focus on, like, are those other horror monsters that have been in other movies?
No. It's a universe of evil superheroes. I'm telling you, it's fucking Earth 3.
gotcha. Okay, so that's where I was, because I was thinking, like, oh, maybe these are horror, like, you know, like, The Conjuring, or I don't know, like other things.
But I mean, that's the whole premise of this universe, is it takes like superheroes and just makes them bad, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm down for that. I'm down. Because I think that these critiques are ultimately helpful for the superhero movies. I think like anybody making a Superman movie after this, if you're going to do a Ma and Pa Kent story, you're going to have one where like they address like stuff like this in a much more, you know, direct way. By the way, the attempted sex talk that he has.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
So good.
Yeah. That was one of the better talks. I don't think I've ever seen a movie scene where a man sits down and like talks to his kid about sex in a way that like isn't just completely played for laughs or, you know, I mean, it's like, no, he was making a legitimate attempt to connect with the kid and, you know, set him on a good path. Yeah. I mean, people who make a Superman movie after this have to take note of this stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and that those are some of the moments that I find like is extremely wonderful, you know, and for me, the reason that this movie works so much, and as we've said again, is the parents. You know, it's not just the performance, it's also actually the writing of how they interact with him, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And that sort of slow burn. What's funny is I thought I'd seen somebody online commenting that there was like, did you guys ever see that James Gunn movie Super? Where it's apparently there's like a call out to that in this as well. Like, you see like a picture or something of like the guy, the character Super in this movie. I missed it, but when I was kind of like looking around for research after I saw it, I was like, oh, okay, like that's interesting. So there's definitely something going on where they are building a sort of superhero universe. I'm wondering if they're going to sort of like delve into comics at all, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I don't know how far they're like, I haven't checked the box office to see how well it's doing to guarantee that we, you know, get a hold of that nice, sweet Brightburn universe that they sort of promised us here, or whether it's right. something that like it happened and, you know, 12 people saw it and no one cared except us.
IMDb's reporting that like they've made about 15 million gross worldwide so far. I don't know how accurate or up to date that is or anything, but I mean, for a six million dollar budget, you know, that's great.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, Avengers Endgame is still at number 3. Holy cow, that's amazing.
Yeah,
I'm looking at the list now.
Yeah, their movie meter on IMDb is actually number 9 right now, so I think they're doing pretty good.
Wow.
I think they will get. I mean, it'll be interesting to see what they do and whether they go that sort of full route. There are also some interesting sort of suggestions in here that, to me, also as a comic book fan and like as a big Elseworlds fan, not even as an Elseworlds fan, I thought like that would be an interesting take on like the Superman mythos for the comics to use. Because there's a little bit, like, when he has that little speech about the wasps and, like, the message that the ship is sending him, there's a little bit of suggestion of, like, that's what he was sent to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, imagine a world where Krypton was not, like, this sort of peaceful, super science-y, where lovey-dovey, that, like, Superman was sent to be a conqueror and to prepare Earth for, like, a Kryptonian invasion. But he just wound up with nice people who taught him to be nice.
Sure. Yeah. And again, it's been done in the Superman comics where there's like, you know, I mean, they've done storylines where it's like, you weren't sent here to be like the good guy, Clark. You were sent here to take over. You know what I'm saying?
What?
Or you were sent here to like, maybe not take over or lead as an example of superiority. You know what I'm saying?
To rule.
Or, you know, to rule and stuff like that. So again, that sort of thing is, and this thing very much like to your point, Jay, is like, it's a great Elseworlds, it's a great thing, but it's been done in the comics like so many times where I'm like how is this playing out? What's that?
It's time to do it in the movies now.
Exactly.
And I think
give me that movie.
Darkness and like the goriness is a cool, like you get the horror people and you get the superhero people. And like even in the trailers, I wasn't sure which one was gonna outweigh the site, and I was, of course, really happy to see they went really horrific with it.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like watching anti superhero with a horror movie, and like I said, I don't know if you got, you were saying you were that there wasn't a lot of gore. I think the like good, I think the number of gore things that happened were so good that that's what kind of gives me in the like the quality versus quantity. Yeah. But like, did you even cringe at the? At the eyeball one?
Of course I did.
Okay.
I've had LASIK surgery. I've been in that situation, like, sort of. Yeah, no, of course. Of course. I mean, like, well, LASIK, they laser your eye and you're awake. And you're you don't have a needle or anything, but either way. No, of course, that's going to knock everyone out. But so, like, where this movie,
that was a
again,
terrific little, like, effect there. It reminded me a little bit of, like, Carrie, in a way, but you know, when she had the half bloody, you know, the half bloodied lens of there, like looking through things.
Oh yeah. That was nice.
That's right.
Yeah,
that was a really great effect.
The movie had a really tremendous look. It looked slick enough to be like, you know, WB quality caliber, but it also, you know, worked as like a horror movie. I was pretty impressed with like the balances that they struck all the way around in order to do what they did.
Yeah, yeah. You know, horror gore stuff doesn't make me cringe, but that eye thing, holy shit.
It's just funny to me because, like, and I'm going to say something, you know, that you guys might think is crazy, but, like, there's a part of me that's like, we've sort of done this sort of thing. I feel like, how much further can we go with the sociopathic Superman? You know what I'm saying? Like, how much more?
That's
like,
why you need to see Brightburn 2, I tell you.
Well, what, you know, the thing of it is like, hey, give me him like burning somebody from the inside with his heat vision, or give me, you know, give me things that I have
he
not
did
like
that, but from the outside, I guess.
Yeah, but
he's just learning. It's early. He's just figuring out what he can do.
But that's the sort of thing. It's like for me and for somebody who's been exposed to this type of thing, which is why I wasn't sort of like, it didn't, you know, blow me away, is like, okay, like I've sort of seen this thing in other horror movies. I've seen this thing in other Superman things. Maybe I've read or, you know, watched too much. Maybe I'm jaded or whatever, but there's a part of me that's like, how much crazier could we go? Like, what if the kid, like they've done in, like they sort of did in a book called Icon, which was another Superman, sort of like Nykoff, like what if the kid wasn't actually human form, like when he landed on the planet? Like what if he was like the thing at some point and just like free? Like there's so many like crazy things that you could do here that that for me the weakness of it is sticking too close to like the Superman narrative. Maybe that's the point that I haven't been sort of like getting across, and just going like full on like crazy with it, which is a direction I think I would have appreciated more. I'm not saying I didn't like it. I did like it. When I came out, I wasn't like angry or anything, but I was sort of like, "Heh, you know, okay. You know, I maybe Brightburn, maybe Paul is right. Brightburn 2 will give me more of like how out of the box can we go with like Superman torture porn, because that's kind of like what this is." Right?
I think they are. I definitely think they are. I feel like the for me the intimation of the more was the great reveal of when, you know, Elizabeth Banks goes down to the ship to try to pull off a piece to stab the kid.
Yeah.
And like the slow reveal of the little house of horrors that he built down there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Where I was like, oh yeah, this kid's been experimenting on some shit that he's we don't want to know about yet.
Yeah.
He's just figuring it out. Like, I feel like that's just the nature of like low, not necessarily low budget, but of like original-ish horror film is it's just still he's still figuring it out. They are still figuring out what the story is. And like I felt like they took enough sort of chances and enough pushing the boundaries. I agree with you about what he looked like when he came out, and I felt like the dream the dad had started to sort of imply that he didn't look quite human when they pulled him out.
Yeah, yeah.
But they didn't go there, and like that's okay.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
So maybe Christian, you would appreciate my alternate ending, which would be like if I was his parents, maybe we would have just gone full Dexter, right? Like, all right, let's figure out how to use your crazy superpowers for, you know, to kill other bad people and try to nurture his rage.
Absolutely.
Or it's that way.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, for me, the end is fun, and it works like in its creepy own way, where he like crashes the plane and you're like, oh boy, you know, into the house and stuff like that. But for me, there's also a question at the end where I'm like, why does he even bother doing that? Like, I mean, why not just crash the plane? Why hide? Like, why does he feel the need to hide? Like, because it's obvious that he can just do whatever he wants. So, I mean, explain that to me. Like, what is it about the sociopathic nature that would make him want to hide?
I think just still being maybe a kid, but then I guess the response to that is like either he's full on or he's full off. And if we're not seeing the in between, you know, him trying to struggle between being this raised as a human baby and being wherever he's from creature. I'm responding to myself. Maybe he still feels the need to like, oh, I need to hide really quick, but then clearly goes off the train after that.
Yeah. I still think that he's a kid. I feel like the sort of clips in the after like the news stories are covering a couple of years of him slowly building his ability and his power and his decision to be like, no, now I'm just gonna fucking take down buildings and destroy things. Because like there's definitely a suggestion of like, oh, he's just sort of like burning his symbol into fields now and again.
Yeah.
And we sort of like weird random things. We think it's someone doing it a little bit like Superman, you know, sort of after Man of Steel, that he needed that cover to be able to disappear.
Yeah.
And to like discover that. So that, you know, a couple of years later, he can reveal himself and be like, yo, I'm here now and I'm going to destroy you all.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm interested to see. I mean, I hope this when I was watching it, when I came out of the theater, and I felt like this is very much the type of movie that I would probably have seen as a teenager and just freaked out and loved it and been like, oh my God, like this is amazing. And watched it on cable, like anytime it came on, and probably just like, you know, but as an adult with like sort of like years and years of Superman lore behind me, I was like, oh, okay. Like I, you know, okay, good. Like this was good. Like it didn't, you know, blow my hair back or anything, but I appreciated it for it was, for what it was. And I don't like oppose it or am against it because it is like sort of a sick, sick and twisted version of Superman. What I'm hoping for is if they do a sequel is like, let's just see how crazy we can get with it. Oh, yeah. You know what I mean? Let's not stick with, you know, the super, like we've established that this is like a Superman sort of thing. Like, okay, great. Like let's go from there. And that's a bit what I, let's go further from there. You know, like let's imagine something even more sick or demented, which is really weird of me to say, but you know, I guess as a horror fan, sure, I'll go there, you know?
Yes.
Yeah, well, you know, alternate universe, evil Aquaman, or get the fuck out. That's really
it. Yeah, I'm right there with you. Like, give me witchy, weird, crazy Wonder Woman, who's I don't know what she's doing with binding people with those ropes, but please, yes.
So we see like what a slate of what did you say earlier, Jay? Seven movies where
give me seven of these things. Give me a billion of them forever and ever. I will always. This I'm already like Fast and the Furious level into this. Like, I don't care what's coming to me. Give me now.
That's so funny. Yeah, no, I mean, I would see another one. Like, I would go, if there was like Brightburn 2. Like, you know, I would definitely go see it. I mean, I was not like underwhelmed, you know, or upset at the results. I just came out and was like, wow. I mean, again, stunned as to like. How did we get away with this? Like, and then, you know, and then also sort of just sort of gritting my teeth and like, you guys did so much in this movie better than what they've been doing with, you know, the movies of the real character.
I think that that's what's truly irritating you. Is that the people who were doing sort of the parody ended up doing the better job.
And, well, yeah.
Yeah. And again, they should be taking notes on this stuff because, you know, they could do worse than like make a 90-minute Superman movie that, you know, just kicked ass.
Sure, absolutely. Yep. I mean, and that's the thing is like, again, you've got people like, I guess, James Gunn and his cousins who I believe wrote it. And I don't know if the director's related to James Gunn either. But they
worked together on a few projects.
Okay. Yeah. So what I guess the thing is go towards fans of this sort of thing. You know what I mean? To make these things. It just... You know, when you look at somebody like Zack Snyder, you're like, not a fan. You know what I mean? Like, obviously, like, why go to that person? Like, it seems like the ultimate lesson is, you know, particularly of a Brightburn like this. And I think it might have been like Warren Ellis or so I forget which comic creator said it. But he's like, look, if you want to do a Superman story, don't think you're going to get on Superman. Like, you're not going to write on Superman. But you could make a character that's like Superman, quote unquote, you know, air quotes, and do your own thing. And that's sort of like what they've done here. And that's the sort of thing that drives me bonkers sometimes because you could be, you know, and, you know, more power to them. It's like go out and create your own things that you're going to make all your money and you don't have to share any of the money with and, you know, with the studio or whatever. But there is definitely a part of me that's like the executives at, you know, Warner Brothers or whatever. It's like, guys, come on. Like, you've got people out there who can do an amazing job with certain elements of this stuff, you know, and that's not to say, you know, either like if you were to make a Superman story that there shouldn't be certain elements of things that you shouldn't be afraid of him. You know what I mean? Yeah. But don't make it the central, you know, narrative of the whole thing. But, you know, as an alternate universe Elseworlds thing, I was like, this was fun. Like I enjoyed it, you know, could it have gotten sicker and more disturbing? Yes. Yeah. So, and that's, you know, if they do Brightburn 2, I would like to see sort of more of that as disturbed as that makes me sound. But like, where would you guys go with this at this point? Or do you think like, you know, I mean, to sort of like wrap it all up, where do you see like a Brightburn sort of thing going?
Yeah, I think the like origin story, or we just go right, with the next, you know, they meet up with another person that's like him, or he's setting it up for the world, you know, his world to come attack ours.
Yeah. But or would
superhero he's got to fight. Yeah.
Or or get this, it's a redemption story.
Oh, that would be fucking great.
A redemption story. Oh, interesting, interesting.
I would be on board for that. I'd be on board for like a combo of like he is supposed to be softening the world up for, you know, or like a redemption story. He's supposed to be softening the world up for like his people to come and invade. But when they do, he's like, no, this is my planet now.
Yeah.
You don't get to have this planet. This is mine. And like, I'm going to team up with these weird other freaks and we're going to fight you back so that we can rule here.
Yeah, yeah,
I will watch that movie. Fuck it.
Well, everybody contact Jay Holtham for your Brightburn 2 screenwriting needs.
Please,
Paul Edwards.
Serious, I want a subscription to this universe too.
Exactly. Yeah. Just sign me up. I'm on board.
Yeah, I'm not against it. I as Jay said, I also as Jay am a big fan of Elseworlds and, you know, different takes on our favorite heroes. So I appreciated this. I really liked it. As I realized it was going full on horror, though, I was like, okay, let's go full on horror. Like, you know, and I, you know, I feel like this might have been made a little bit more for the teen set, you know, which, you know, I'm fine. I'm not, you know, that's fine. I don't know what I wanted to see, but either way, I enjoyed it. I'm just a Superman fan. That's all I can say. And any different take on it is fun for me, you know? So, I mean, for God's sake, they had the spaceship in the barn. I mean, come on. It's the same thing. It's the same thing. All right. Anyway, any final words on Brightburn?
No, I was expecting more of a superhero of the movie than a horror movie. And just like you, I was pleasantly surprised and liked that they went that way.
Nice.
Good gore. Great gore. Shout out to, was it Fragment? Fragment Effects? Yeah.
That was funny. Yeah. When she goes to reach for her eye, I was like, don't take it out. You're just like, call the hospital, call 911 right now. Don't take it out. You're going to damage yourself permanently. I was like,
but then when she did it and then they did that cool camera effect, I was like, all right, I forgive you.
I think the jaw was my favorite, though.
The jaw was a little bit like, for me, I was like the jaw in the truck and he's like kind of choking and gurgling. And I'm like, no, you're in shock. You would not see anything. You would be passed out. You would not see anything. Done. As soon as the jaw comes off. Like, I was just like, no. But anyway, whatever. It's a movie. It's a movie with the flying boy who shoots lasers out of his eyes. What am I going to do?
Yes.
Yeah. Anyway.
One thing that I learned from Googling. The lead kid, Big Summer, because he is young Scott Lang.
Yeah.
Like 2 seconds in Endgame.
Yeah.
I saw that he was Endgame. I was actually going to ask what he's in. So.
So, you know, wondering,
buddy.
Good on you, kid. That's a good summer for you.
Well, the kid's last name is Dunn. So I'm wondering if he's related to Gunn and they just changed the G to a D. Either way, whatever. Good work. I mean, he was great in this. You know, we totally skipped over him, but he was really good. Like for a kid, like, I don't know how old he is, but he was solid.
He's 12.
Shameless. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He's in Shameless. Yeah. Yeah. I have to say, like, I was very impressed with his sociopathic nature and you know, emotional.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that moment where he's like, oh yeah, everything's cool. I just figured it out. I'm special and everything. And that's, and he just explains it out. So matter of fact, I was just at that moment that I was just like, oh, everybody's fucked.
It was that. Yeah, yeah. It was also the, like, I feel like you expect me to cry.
Yeah. I feel like you want me to be sad or something like that. Yeah. That was great. That was some great stuff. I mean, those were great moments too, where it's definitely sort of like, again, it reminded me of The Omen, where it was like, wait, something's wrong with this kid.
This kid's not right.
Yeah, the kids are not all right in this movie.
His first TV debut in 2014 was called Killer Kids. So
he's had practice. Yeah. No, he was great in this. Like, I feel badly that we kind of skipped over him because I was so involved as to how great Elizabeth Banks did. But yeah. for like a completely sociopathic, emotionally disturbed superhero, kid, Superboy sort of template thing, like, he did great. Like it's too bad that they didn't cast him as like a Superboy or right. something. Like, it would have been fun. But yeah. No, we cannot sign off without, you know, without proclaiming the great talents of Jackson A. Dunn. Not Gunn. Done. Anyway, all right, so this has been the Brightburn episode of Part-Time Fanboy. My name is Christian Horn. I have been on the line with my good friends Jay Holtham, Paul Edwards, and Reina Velarde. As always, you can check us out on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, all those wonderful things. You can listen to us on iTunes, and now you can check us out on Spotify. Yes,
nice.
The Part-Time Fanboy podcast Ooh. Has made the big time. I don't know how big it is. Look, I just submitted the podcast. It's on there. But anyway, we are on Spotify now. You can listen to us there. And as always, thank you for listening. And we will be back soon with hopefully a Godzilla episode.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back soon. Bye.
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 Part-Time Fanboy.